with the filthy conversation of the wicked. For that righteous man, dwelling among them in seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. Notice it says in verse 7, and delivered just Lot. Now that word just is not saying that he delivered only Lot, because he didn't deliver only Lot. Lot and his wife and his two daughters were delivered from Sodom. Now we know what happened to his wife when she got out, but he didn't deliver just Lot. So the word just there doesn't mean only Lot. It means it's describing Lot as a just man. In fact, it says in verse number 8, that righteous man. And yet the Bible tells us twice, once in verse 7, that he vexed himself. Verse number 7, and delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy conversation of the wicked. The word vexed means worn down. Worn down with the filthy conversation of the wicked. If you know the story, and we're going to talk about it a little bit, Lot lived in Sodom and Gomorrah. And the conversation there was filthy. And the lifestyle there was filthy. Why did Lot stay there? Why did he stay there and vex his soul with the filthy conversation? And you know, and we've talked about it recently, the word conversation in our Bible means more than just the vocabulary of words. It means their manner of living. The immorality of that place was unbelievable. We ain't seen nothing yet. You think it's bad now, you just hang on. It's going to get worse and worse and worse. I heard while we were up in Toledo that the state of California passed a law that is now requiring Christian schools and colleges to not be able to exclude LGBT people. Now, you know what's unusual about that? It didn't say religious. It's not telling religious institutions. It said Christian. They're targeting Christian. The Muslims are just as much against that kind of thing as we are as Christians. In fact, they take it farther than we would. But it didn't say Muslim, it didn't say religious, it said Christian. We're being singled out. And it's just beginning. The Bible says that Lot lived in an environment like that, in a community like that, and he vexed. He was worn down by the filthy conversation of the wicked. We talked about the church this morning being a garden. You know why it's a garden? Because we get to get away from the filthy conversation of the wicked. It's a place where we can come and grow, and we can come and be blessed, and we can walk with God, and all those things we talked about. But Lot lived in a place, I doubt there was a church in Sodom. He lived in a place where he was vexed with the filthy living of people every single day, yet he stayed there. Verse 8. For that righteous man dwelling among them in seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day. That word vexed in verse number 8 talks about being tortured. Being vexed, being tortured, being worn down and being tortured. I don't know about you, it tortures me to hear somebody use the Lord's name in vain. When somebody calls out Jesus Christ in a blasphemous manner, that wears me down and that tortures me. That vexes me. And here was Lot living in a place where that was going on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. That was where he chose to live. That's where he selected to dwell. And the Bible tells us twice that he was vexed in that place where he chose to dwell. How does a righteous man, how does a just man survive and choose to live in that kind of environment? I want you to go back then to Genesis chapter 12, and let's try to get an understanding of why someone like Lot, that the Bible calls a just man and a righteous man, why he would choose to remain in a place like Sodom. Genesis chapter 12, let's begin reading in verse number 4. Genesis 12 and verse number 4. So Abraham departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. And Abram was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. And Abram took Sarai, his wife, and Lot, his brother's son. All right, that makes Lot Abraham's nephew, his brother's son. He took him, and with all their substance and that they had gathered, and the souls that they had gotten in Haran, and they went forth to go into the land of Canaan. And into the land of Canaan they came. And Abram passed through the land unto the place of Sychem, unto the plain of Moreh. And the Canaanite was then in the land. And the Lord appeared unto Abram and said, verse 7, unto thy seed will I give this land. All right? He is in what we call now the promised land. Abraham, for the first time, has set his souls and set his feet in the land of Canaan. Now, the Canaanite is still there, and God's going to expel them from the land because it doesn't belong to them. But Abraham is now in the land, and what does he do? Verse 7, and there he builded an altar unto the Lord who appeared unto him. Verse 8, and he removed from thence unto a mountain on the east of Bethel, and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west and Hai on the east. And there, again, in that land, in that promised land, in the land of Canaan, but moving along in it, there builded he an altar and called upon the name of the Lord. And Abraham journeyed, going on still toward the south. All right, here we find Abraham in the land. And what is he doing? It tells us twice. He builded an altar. Abraham has taken his nephew Lot. He's taken his wife Sarai. He has obeyed God, and he has gone to where God told him to go, into the land of Canaan, a strange land, but a land flowing with milk and honey, a land that God promised to Abraham and to his seed forever. And Abraham gets into that land, and as soon as he gets there, out of thankfulness, he builds an altar, and he calls upon the name of the Lord. As he travels from that one spot, he moves a little farther, heading toward the south in that land that God has given. And again, he builds an altar and calls on the name of God. And Lot is watching everything Abram does. I want you to remember this. Lot, his nephew, his brother's son, is watching everything that Uncle Abraham does. It's not too long until trouble comes. In verse number 10. In verse 10, the Bible says, and there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there. Everything is going fine. Abraham's building an altar. He's calling upon the name of God. And then trouble comes. And the minute trouble comes, Abraham flees to Egypt. Egypt is not a good place to go. Egypt is a type in the Bible of the world, modern society. Abraham leaves the place that God has promised him, where he's built the altars and called on the name of God, and when the famine comes, he runs down to Egypt. And Lot is watching everything Abraham does. Abraham goes down to Egypt, and in verse number 10 down to verse number 20, we read what Abraham does in Egypt. And we don't have time to read down through there, but if you know the story, Abraham goes down to Egypt, and his wife is beautiful. Sarai is a good-looking woman. And Abraham knows these Egyptians. And he says, the minute these Egyptians see my fair-complected, beautiful wife, they're going to kill me so that they can take her. So he talks to Sarai, and he says to her, he says, I tell you, I pray thee, tell them that you are my sister. Now, can you even understand warped thinking like that? There is so much warped thinking in this story in the Old Testament, it's unbelievable. Tell them that you're my sister so that they don't kill me to take you. Well, so then what? So they're going to leave him alive and take his wife? And I mean, how was that supposed to turn out? The Bible tells us what Abraham did when he went down to Egypt, but what the Bible doesn't tell us is what I want you to notice is what he didn't do. What did he do? What does it say twice he did when he went into the land of Canaan? There he built an altar and he called upon the name of the Lord. You know when he goes into Egypt in verse 10, the Bible doesn't tell us anything about him building an altar and doesn't say anything about him calling upon the name of the Lord. In fact, you go to chapter 13, after that mess of chapter 12, and Abraham comes up out of Egypt, he and his wife, and he goes back to the altar, and he goes back and calls on God. But there's that short aberration in those 10 verses or 11 verses in Genesis chapter 12, where he messes up bad. He flees the land because of a famine. He goes into Egypt. He does what's wrong. He doesn't call upon God. He doesn't build an altar. And can I tell you this? Lot is still watching. Now here's what we want. Kids, nephews, grandkids, watch me when I'm doing right. You with me? Watch me when I'm building an altar. Watch me when I'm calling upon God. We call those teaching moments. We want to sit down with our kids and something happens and we say, all right, here's a wonderful opportunity to teach our children something. Well, can I tell you this? You can't pick your teaching moments. Abraham would have said, Lot, now you watch this as we're in Canaan. I'm going to build this altar and here's how we do it and here's how we worship God and here's how we pray. And then they move a little farther and do the whole thing again. And he's hoping Lot will pick up on this. But then when the famine comes, he runs like a dog between his tail, between his legs, runs down to Egypt. And he doesn't build an altar. And he doesn't call upon God. And he begins telling lies. And he puts his family in danger. And even endangers the Pharaoh of Egypt, because God says about that in verse 17, that the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abraham's wife. And Lot is watching. Can we remind ourselves of this lesson that we are being watched by sets of eyes? And those eyes don't close when we do the wrong thing? And I have learned by experience that they usually pick up the wrong things much faster than they do the right things. You can do the right things in front of them over and over and over again, and they'll get it, and it'll be ingrained, but you do the wrong thing, and that's a quicker lesson for some reason than all the good things you do. Abraham set a wonderful example of walking by faith, of leaving Ur of Chaldees, of going to the land that God directed him to, of building the altar, of praying. But that didn't make Lot the kind of man that would vex his righteous soul. But what he did in Egypt was. And so Abraham goes down into Egypt, and he sets a pattern for Lot to watch. And the whole time that Abraham's doing this, he's not realizing that he is affecting the life of his nephew. His nephew is watching everything he does. His nephew is absorbing everything that he does. His nephew is learning from everything that he does. Verse 10 tells us there was a famine in the land and Abraham went down to Egypt. What causes a famine in the Bible? If you know, every time there was a famine, think about the days of Ahab and Elijah. Elijah was called of God to go in before Ahab and to point his finger in his face and say, because of your wickedness, it's not going to rain. There's not going to be any dew, but according to my word. And for 3.5 years, there was no rain, and a great famine came on the land. You know when famine comes? When there's no rain. When there's no water. So fast forward, if you would, over to Genesis chapter 13. And let's notice how that incident in Genesis 12 affected Lot. Here's the first point. I've got 3 points tonight. This is number one. Notice what affected him. Talking about Lot. Notice what affected him. Abraham set a good example of praying and of building an altar. And I don't ever find Lot doing any of those things anywhere in Genesis. But then Abraham turns around and he manipulates the situation and he acts in the flesh. And I see Lot, a righteous man, vexing his soul with the filthy conversation of the wicked because he learned something. Something Abraham did affected him. He ran to Egypt when the famine came. Instead of staying in the land by the altar and praying and trusting God, he used his human wisdom and his human understanding and he did it as fast as he could. He crossed the border into Egypt. And Lot remembered that. Genesis chapter 13, look at verse 1. We talked about this. And Abram went up out of Egypt. All right, after that bad experience at the end of chapter 12, Abram goes up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him into the south. Talking about the south of Israel again. And Abraham was very rich in cattle and silver and gold, and he went on his journeys from the south even to Bethel, into the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, unto the place of the altar, which he had made there at the first, and there Abraham called on the name of the Lord. All right, Abraham gets himself straightened out. He got away from the altar, he got away from prayer for a short time. It's an aberration to him, and he gets himself straightened out. But it doesn't help Lot. Lot's already been infected. Lot's already been affected. What he saw Abraham do when push came to shove, what he saw Abraham do when his back was put to the wall, that's what Lot learned from Abraham. How to handle adversity. Flee. How to handle adversity. Look to Egypt. And look what happens to Lot. Verse 5. And Lot also, which went with Abram, had flocks and herds and tents. And the land was not able to bear them that they might dwell together, for their substance was great so that they could not dwell together. God blessed Abraham and God blessed Lot, and their substance became great. Verse 7, because they were so blessed, there was a strife between the herdmen of Abraham's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. And the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled then in the land. And Abraham said to Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. That's what Abraham says to Lot. You've got an abundance, I've got an abundance. Our herdmen are at strife against each other. The Canaanite and the Perizzite that are in the land are watching Abraham's herdmen strive with Lot's herdmen. And they're saying, look at these Jews can't even get along with each other. And it's a bad example and a bad testimony. So Abraham says to Lot, is not the whole land before thee? There's enough land for both of us. Separate, I pray thee, from me. And if thou wilt take the left hand, then I'll go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, I'll go to the left. Abraham's giving Lot first choice. He said, if you want to go to the east, I'll go to the west. You want to go to the north, I'll go to the south. You pick first, Lot, and then I'll go the other direction. We've got to do this to resolve the conflict. Verse 10. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan. Now, the first thing we know is that if Lot was the right kind of man, he'd have said, Abraham, you pick first. I'm the nephew. I'm the younger. You're the elder. You pick first. But we see the hint of Lot already coming out. That when Abraham offers to him, he lifts up his eyes and beholds all the plain of Jordan. Notice what he notices. That it was well watered everywhere. You know what Lot's thinking of? God's never going to get me to flee with a famine. I'm going to take care of myself. I'm going to be self-sufficient. I'm going to be my own man. I'm not going to need God. I'm going to go to a place that's well watered. Notice in verse 10, it's just amazing. Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. You know what's going to happen to that well watered place. But notice this. Even as the garden of the Lord, that's the Garden of Eden, with the rivers running into it, that's how well watered this place is. But notice this. Like the land of Egypt. You know what stuck in Lot's mind? If I can get a place like that, I'll never have to worry about famine. I won't have to depend on God. I won't have to build an altar. I won't have to call upon the name of the Lord. If I could get a place like that, I'd have everything I need. And what Lot saw Abraham do in his time of affliction is what Lot learned the most from. Folks, can we say this? It's not the times of ease that are going to teach others. It's the times of adversity. How you and I handle troubles. How you and I handle trials. Abraham's life in the land, a land flowing with milk and honey, well watered, building altars and praying had no effect whatsoever on Lot. But what Abraham did when the tough time came is what Lot learned from. That's what he picked up on. What happened between these two affected Lot. What happened in Genesis chapter 12, the first 9 verses didn't affect him. Abraham walking with God, building an altar, praying to God. What happens in chapter 13 when Abraham comes back out of Egypt and goes back to the altar didn't affect him. But that little bit of time away is what did the damage. You know why you and I need to maintain a good testimony? Because we're damning other people when we set a bad example. We are affecting other people that are watching us. And can I tell you, they're going to learn the bad faster than they learn the good. It's just it's a fact of life. They're going to learn the bad faster than they learn the good. That's why we need to maintain the good. Stay in fellowship with God. I heard a preacher, and I'm not condemning or criticizing him, but a preacher that preached up there, and he preached more than one time, and several times he made the comment, I got saved when I was 6 years old, I think he said, and for 14 years, I lived a wicked life before I got right. I am glad to say, proud's not the word, I'm glad to tell you that when I got saved at 18 years old, I have never gotten out of church since then. Now, I'm not going to say I've always been what I'm supposed to be for God. You know, you say, well, what, define backslidden. Well, backslidden means if there's ever been a time where you were close to God and you're not there, then you're backslidden. All right, we've all been there. But I don't have the testimony. Yeah, I got saved when I was 18, but then my heart got cold on God and I got out of church and I got away and then finally came back. No, it's been constant all the way through. And I don't say that to boast or brag. I say that because that's what we need to do. We need to set a constant example for those that are watching us. We need them to know it doesn't pay to get away from God. Because Lot watched Abraham and all the good he did, he didn't learn from. He never repeats any of those good things. But he repeats the bad one. It affected him. And when Abraham said, you pick the direction you want to go, he said, that looks like Egypt. That's what's in my heart. That's where I want to go. So why did Lot stay in a place that vexed his righteous soul? That tortured him, that wore him down? Because what Abraham did affected him. Then notice something else. Notice number 2. Not only notice what affected him, but number 2, notice what appealed to him. We're talking about Lot. We know now what's affected him. Why would he choose the well-watered plains that look like Egypt? Well, now we know. But we can see something else, more than just what affected him, what appealed to him. Go over to Genesis chapter 19. Now Lot has been in the city for a while. He's been in Sodom. He's established himself. In fact, by the time we get to Genesis chapter 19, he's raised his family. Some of his girls have married men from that town. He has ingrained himself in that society. He has moved in and he has run for mayor. Chapter 19 and verse 1 says this, there came two angels to Sodom at night, and Lot sat in the gate. That phrase right there, sat in the gate. That's a term that indicates that Lot was in a position of authority in Sodom and Gomorrah. He's no longer a wayfaring stranger that happened to move into that town as he did in Genesis chapter 13. But now he's been there for a while, he's established himself, and now he is in a position of leadership in the city council in Sodom and Gomorrah. He's somebody. He's got a name. Can I say this? He's kind of like a politician. I don't care if the ship sinks as long as it's my ship. I don't care how wicked the city is as long as it's my city. I don't care how wicked the people are, what they do, as long as they're my people. He wants control. He wants authority. And the Bible tells us he sat in the gate. In fact, we know that that's so much so because if you know the story, look down at verse number 9. If you know the story, the two angels come in and they go to Lot's house and there's the wickedness that takes place, some men of the city, the Sodomites of the city, come to Lot's door, and they want to break down the door, and they want to take these two men. They're angels, but they want to take these two men and sodomize them. That's the city that Lot's living in. And when they come to the door, and Lot tells them to back off, and Lot tries to exercise some authority over them, he finds out exactly how much authority he really has. And in verse 9, they said, "Stand back." And they said again, "This one fellow," talking about Lot, "came in to sojourn." He moved into our town to live here. "And he will needs be a judge." You see what Lot's done? He has gotten himself into that town. He's married his daughters off to some of the men in that town. He's gotten himself elected to a position in that town. And he's in a place of authority. He's in a place of leadership in a wicked, ungodly place that he should have fled long time ago. But it appealed to him. The well-watered plains, like unto Egypt. A place where he could have some power and have some authority, where he was the man in charge. And he could make decisions. Lot was in control of his circumstances. Lot was in control of his environment. It might have been ungodly and wicked, but at least he was in control of it. And he was in control of others. And that appealed to him. You know, there's a lot of folks that their place of power and position is more important to them than anything else. It appeals to them. Right and wrong kind of go out the window. And as long as they're in charge, they're happy. That's Lot. Why? Why would he vex his righteous soul in that place? Because he was the man in charge. It was his city. He sat in the gate. He was made a judge over them. And it appealed to him. Then I want you to see thirdly and lastly. I want you to notice what eluded him. What affected him. What appealed to him. But what eluded him. You know what Lot found out in Genesis chapter 19? He found out he didn't think he had anything. He didn't have anything he thought he had. He thought he had power over his circumstances. And then these two angels come to town and said, "Here's what's going to happen to your town." "Well, where's your power now, Lot? Where's your authority now?" He thought he had so much power and authority and control because he ruled over this little town. And now these two angels come and said, "By tomorrow, this time, this place is going to be burning in brimstone. Fire and brimstone. God's going to destroy this place." The angels had just met with Abraham outside of town. You know the story. Told Abraham what they're about to do. And now they go into Sodom and Gomorrah. And they meet with Lot and they tell him, "You need to pack up. You need to get out of here. You're not in control like you think you are. Your circumstances are being dictated by God. In fact, even your environment now is going to be affected by God. God is going to rain down fire and brimstone." You see how useless Lot really is? What's he going to do? Pass a bill through Congress and stop it from happening? What's he going to do? Put a petition? What's he going to do? Go sit on the floor? Go have a sit-in and demand? Lot is powerless against what's going to happen in his own environment where he has lived for control. He thinks he's got power over people. "I'm a judge in this town. I'm a councilman. I'm a mayor. I'm a leader." And when these two men come into his house and the men of Sodom surround that house wanting to take that two men, they don't listen to a thing that Lot says. They could care less about him. He realizes, "I have no influence whatsoever." Not only that, but when he finally gets the message from the two angels that this place is going to be evaporated, I mean, they're just going to annihilate. It's going to rain down fire and brimstone, and by the time it's done, you're going to call this place the south border of the Dead Sea. It's going to be the Salt Sea once we get done with this. And he's got no control over his environment, no control over the town, no control over the people. He doesn't even have control over his own family. Because it tells us in Genesis chapter 19, In verse 12, the angel said to Lot, "Hast thou any here besides son-in-law and thy sons and thy daughters and whatsoever thou hast in the city? Bring them out of this place." You know what Abraham had done with God on the hillside as the angels had told Abraham, "We're going down to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah." And Abraham said, "Hey, if you find 90 righteous people down there, will you spare the place?" And you know the story. Abraham began to bicker with God. "If you find 45 righteous, will you spare it?" God said, "If I find 45, if you find 40. Abraham got God down to 10. "If I find 10 righteous people in that city, I'll spare it." I am of the firm belief that Lot and his wife had at least 8 daughters, sons-in-laws in that family that Abraham thought, "I know that Lot's there and his wife there. He's a just man. He's a righteous man." Abraham didn't realize how vexed Lot had become. And he thought, surely there's 10 down there. And when Lot went around to tell, notice in verse number 14, "And Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law," plural, sons-in-law, "which married his daughters," plural, "and said, Up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city." When Lot finally got the message, notice what it said, "But he seemed as one that mocked unto his son." He had no power, authority, or control over his own family. Lot thought he'd arrived. He's in the well-watered plains, like unto Egypt. He's sitting in the gate, and he's got power, and he's got authority. And when push came to shove, and the angel showed up, Lot realized, "I don't have anything at all. I've got absolutely nothing." And he vexed, he tortured his righteous soul from day to day. But look back at chapter 13. Look back at chapter 13. What about Abraham? What happened with him? Well, we talked about Genesis 12, verse 10 to 20. That was an aberration to Abraham. Thank God. That was a bad moment in Abraham's decision-making process. And we've all had those bad moments. Before and after, and he's doing fine, but for that short span right there where he was brain dead. Not walking by faith, but walking by sight, and chose to go down to Egypt. For him, that was just a short period of time, and it didn't affect him permanently like it did Lot. And notice here in Genesis chapter 13 and verse number 9, Genesis 13 and verse number 9, Abraham, we'd read this, said to Lot, "Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand and go to the right, then I will go to the right. If thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left." And you know what happened there? Lot made the decision. Lot chose the well-watered plains that look so good. And how did that turn out? It turned out to be the Dead Sea. It turned out to be the lowest elevation in the world, and water goes in and can't get out, and it's filled with salt, and it's a mess. And it won't be fixed until the Lord comes back, and then it will be. You read the book of Revelation, book of Ezekiel, and they're going to set up channels. We studied that a while ago. They're going to set up an irrigation system and all that and fix the Dead Sea, but it's a mess from that time till the Lord comes back. That's how it worked out for Lot. He lost his wife as she fled from that city and turned to look back. And we can all try to say, why did she turn and look back? People say, well, you know, the new furniture that she just got and that nice house. No, I think it was those daughters and sons-in-law that she left behind. And she turned to a pillar of salt. And then Lot went up to a cave, and you know what happened to him and the immorality that happened to him in that cave. Lot turns out a mess. And he vexed his righteous soul. But what about Abraham? Genesis 13 and verse 14. "And the Lord said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated to him, lift up now thine eyes, and look from the place where thou art." All right? Lot had made his choice. Abraham had given Lot first choice, and Lot took what looked the best. That land that looked like Egypt. And Abraham might have been, that one's out. Now I've got to take the bad places. But God says, He says to him at that verse, he says, "Look from the place where thou art, northward and southward and eastward and westward." Now, just in case you don't know, there's no other direction left. He's telling Abraham, you look in a 360, you look all the way around you. And he says in verse 15, for all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed forever. I like verse 16. And I will make thy seed as the dust. Why did he say the dust? They're in a famine. It's dry. Lot's looking for water. He's looking for rain. He didn't say at that point, as the sands of the sea. That would have been moist ground. He says, as the dust of the earth. So that if a man can number the dust of the earth, so shall thy seed and thy number be. Arise, walk through the land, the length of it and the breadth of it, and I will give it unto thee. Then Abraham removed his tent and came and dwelt to the plain of Mamre, which is in Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord. See, Abraham went on. He went forward, and it turned out good for Abraham. But that young one under his care, that nephew that watched him, he ends up in a cave with two daughters, committing incest. And from that come the Ammonites and the Moabites that give Israel trouble for the rest of their history. And it all happened because of that short aberration in the life of Abraham. So, preacher, what are you saying? You and I are being watched. I don't care if you're grandparents, if you're parents, if you're kids. You have an influence on people that are watching you. You have a testimony. They know you go to Bible Baptist Church. They know you profess to love God. They know you claim to be a Christian, and they are watching. And all it takes in our life is a 10-minute, I mean it's longer than that, but an 11-verse window. All it takes in our life is an 11-verse window to blow everything. Oh, we'll come out okay. It'll be all right for us. I just read that story about Hezekiah in the Bible. I finished 2 Kings, reading about Hezekiah. And Hezekiah, God came and he said, you're not going to get up off that bed, but you're going to die. And Hezekiah turned his face to the wall and he prayed, and God added to him 15 years. Isn't that wonderful? I don't remember how old he was, but God now told him, I guess that's wonderful. It'd kind of be ominous too, wouldn't it? You know, if you're 60 years old and you're about to die and God says, hey, I'll tell you what, I'll give you 15 more years. When you're 74, wouldn't it? I don't know, that would be very comforting. But Hezekiah, you know what Hezekiah says? The Lord tells him, Hezekiah, I'm going to give you 15 more years, but after you're gone, judgment's going to fall. And Hezekiah said, is it not good if peace is in my days? He's not worried about his kids. He's not worried about his grandkids. He's not worried about the nation that he rules over. He's just worried about himself. Is it not good that peace are in my days? Abraham never intended to set Lot on a path toward vexation. But a good man did that to a just man. A good man, the father of the faithful, did that to a righteous man. Lot was a righteous man, but he vexed his soul. Why did that happen? Because he learned from bad example. Because it appealed to him. And by the time it was over, there was no getting away. There's power in sin. There's pleasure in sin for a season. That righteous man vexed his soul. Why didn't he bail out? Why didn't he get out of there long before the angels came and said, we're going to destroy this place? He was tied in. He was locked in. Don't be like Lot. Separate. Withdraw. Get away from that kind of crowd. Get away from those kind of people. It's all right. I'll be okay. Yeah, that's what Abraham said. I'll be okay. He went down into Egypt. He came back out. But you know what? Lot never came back up out of Egypt. Oh, physically he did. He came with Uncle Abraham back into the promised land. But mentally and emotionally and spiritually, he never came out of Egypt. Folks, we can't erase what we've done in the past. We can only change what we're doing in the present. But we can affect what's going to happen in the future. Let's set an example. Let's set a pattern. Let's realize that every moment is a teaching moment for those that are watching us. Not just the good ones. But every moment is a teaching moment. And let's not produce another Lot. Let's stand together tonight with our heads bowed and our eyes closed. Father, we know that if Abraham were here tonight, he would regret that sojourn down into Egypt.